time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Bill Bixel, Susan Crane, Steve Kelly, and Ann Montgomery. Father Bill Bixel is from Tacoma, Washington. Susan Crane is from Baltimore, Maryland. Steve Kelly is from Oakland, California, and Ann Montgomery is from New York, New York. And they were four of the five people who were arrested at Naval Base Kitsap Bangor at the largest nuclear weapons storage area in the U.S. on November 2nd of 2009 in a nonviolent direct action. I want to thank all four of you for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's start out, and if you could tell us what were the circumstances that brought you four to do a direct action on the Trident nuclear subbase back almost a year ago, November 2nd of 2009.
Well, we belong to a movement called the Plowshares Movement, inspired by Isaiah's prophecy, they shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. It was initiated in 1980 when eight of us went into the General Electric plant in Pennsylvania where the Mark 12A nuclear warhead was being manufactured. And we were convicted for hammering on that with hammers, which represent taking something apart to turn it into something useful like a washing machine, and pouring our own blood in, you know, solidarity with the victims of all wars. And because there was a large nuclear, anti-nuclear movement in the 80s, when it was still the Cold War, and we felt that it needed something more, a little spark to help it keep going. We were convicted for that. But during the appeals process, one judge said better than I can what the problem is. He said, "We live today, therefore, in the midst of a cosmic drama. We possess a power which should never be used, but which might be used if we do not reverse our direction. We live with nuclear weapons, knowing we cannot afford to make one serious mistake." And further, in opposition to what many of the courts have done in saying we could have used other means or this was unreasonable, he said, "Instead, at least so far as I can tell from the record, their belief was that their action in combination with the actions of others might accelerate a political process ultimately leading to the abandonment of nuclear missiles." From that time, there have been over 100 plowshares actions involving people not only in this country but in Europe and other places. I became horrified by the Trident submarine during the time it was being built in the early 80s at General Dynamics in Groton, Connecticut. So we often went there, we vigiled, we did all the things you're supposed to do, write letters, talk to people, vigil there. Several employees actually left because people would lie down on the sidewalk when guests, you know, in all our finery were going into the so-called christening of these horrible subs. And so, again, some of us went into the base and onto one of the Trident submarines and did our second plowshares and, of course, were convicted for that. So I feel as though I have followed Trident across the country. We tried every way we could in electric boat to expose these subs. Actually, they were pretty visible out in the Thames River. But we canoed. We walked. We even swam. The last plowshares action I did there was in 1989, and we actually swam to the Trident. Some people went in a canoe. And I felt that was the best way to do it, to show that we are vulnerable. But out of our vulnerability and in combination with others, with all the other different means they use to expose the submarines, that was the way to go because that's who we are. And so now here where all these terrible weapons are being stored in bunkers, kept invisible from the public around, we tried again and entered of SWIFPAC, which is the Strategic Weapons Facility Pacific. We carried carpenter's hammers again, our own blood, and also sunflower seeds to represent life, and we hope they will grow there. And we got through the fences, and that is what we are being charged with a great deal. It's horrible damage to a fence, and then you have to compare it to a nuclear weapon. And Judge Spaeth here brings out that we have to look at the value. The courts have to look at the value. What is more valuable, a fence or eliminating nuclear weapons? So I think my moment of joy, sounds strange, was facing those bunkers, watching the sunrise over them. At the same time, the Star Spangled Banner was waking up the soldiers off in the distance, and these horrible lights over the bunkers were glaring, you know, fake lights, fake security, fake everything. But the sunrise was there, and we had actually arrived. And so I think our action was very worthwhile, even though we will be silenced in court, our experts probably not allowed. We're trusting that people, ordinary citizens, who are, after all, the people of this country and responsible for what it does, will find ways to join us in combination with what we did.
Well, I think that addressed one of the questions that you see in people commenting within the newspapers is, why didn't you try the democratic means, you know, going to Washington and or lobbying, things like that? So obviously you've done that over the years.
Yeah, we've done all of those things. You know, we've lobbied, we've vigiled, we've visited our congresspeople in their offices. We've had vigils and marches and walks. This is going on for about 40 years. So we've done all of those things, and but to no avail, you know. So then I myself, over the years, I've been involved with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolence, you know, which is located right up in Silverdale area, but it's a peace camp that's right next to the Trident submarine base, and it's been in existence since 1977. And so basically it's to be a sign of resistance, what was mustered up in the Northwest against the Trident base when the Trident submarines began to come, when that base was converted into a Trident submarine base, and then the submarines began to come. And there were many of us at the beginning in the 70s and so forth that were up there resisting, as at daytime they called it civil resistance, or pardon me, they called it civil disobedience. But for myself, this is my first time being involved in a plowshares action with my distinguished sisters and brother, you know, so I'm very happy to be there. Actually, it took us a year before we actually did the action up at Bangor for us to pray together, to think and consider where do we want to move, you know, trusting in our prayer and how the Spirit might lead us, you know. So it finally did, we all kind of agreed upon that would be the place. It seemed the most formidable kind of place to enter, to expose nuclear weapons in some way or another, to be there, to be a witness to life rather than death. That's where we were led. But it was a year of planning in the sense of meeting together to pray and to discern ourselves, what are we called to, how are we called to be peacemakers, as we're enjoined to do in our own tradition.
So you've been in court a couple times so far. There's also court dates coming up that we want to let people know more about, you'd like people to turn out for. But what has been the results of your arguments in court? I know you've tried to bring forth the Nuremberg defense, or I think I'm getting that wrong, but
we've tried to talk about the necessity defense, which is a very simple defense. If the usual example is, if you're walking down the street and there's a house burning up nearby, and you see the house and there's a child at the top floor saying, "Help me," you have a duty and a responsibility, of course, to break down the door of the house and go inside and rescue the child. Whereas normally that would be seen as breaking and entry and entering and trespass. In that example, you have a right and a responsibility to do that. And likewise, we feel that we have a right and a responsibility to go on the base and say, there's something worse than a fire going on here. There's the possibility of the whole earth being destroyed, being made into a nuclear winter, being made unlivable for humans and llamas and fox and everything else. So it was in that, with that, knowing that we went there, and knowing that these weapons are illegal under international law, under humanitarian law. They can't be controlled in space or time, the effects of the weapons, and also they're indiscriminate. They indiscriminately kill civilians or anybody. They destroy whole towns, whole cities. It's beyond our imagination what they can do. The weapons there are, the warheads that are being held there are some of them are 30 times the blast and radiation and heat of the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. So we felt that what we did was legal. It was our responsibility. It was important for us to do, to say no to these weapons. And yet now we're going to court. We're going to trial starting December 7th. It will last several days, we imagine. And we're charged with trespass and with destruction of property and depredation of property and conspiracy. So we've tried to talk to the court about the necessity defense and why we have a right to bring that forward to the jury, which we do. However, we just got a motion from the government that the court will probably agree with, saying that we can't talk about necessity in the courtroom. And not only that, this motion in limine says that we shouldn't talk about the lethalness, the lethality of nuclear weapons. We can't talk about what happens when nuclear weapons are used, mm-hmm. and what happens to the environment, what happens to human flesh, what happens to people for generation after generation. And, you know, if we can't talk about nuclear weapons, we can't talk about why we did what we did, we're not going to be able to talk to the jury like we're talking here today. And it's going to be hard. I think we don't know what we're going to do exactly. But the trial will start December 7th, which is a Tuesday. The night before that, we're having a Festival of Hope at St. Leo's Church at 5:30, starting with a potluck. And we invite everyone who's listening to come to that. We hope they will. And Angie Zelter will be speaking. She's a woman, a campaigner from Scotland, who's done actions just like ours and has been acquitted because she's able to talk about international law in the courtroom.
And the trial itself is open to the public, is that correct?
Yes, the trial will be open to the public, and not only will the trial be going on, but there'll be a vigil and chanting and a presence outside the courtroom. And we like to think that it's not just us on trial, that it's Trident on trial, that this is a trial about nuclear weapons, even though the court wants them silenced, doesn't want those words mentioned, but that's what we want to talk about. We also have a website. It's HTTP. Disarmnowplowshares.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And it will have the event. There's an events page with all the events on them.
Yeah, it seems odd that with all the COP and trial shows that we are saturated with on television, where motive is such a critical thing. They're always talking about, oh, you need motive. We can't, you know, process this without it, that they are denying you to present what your motives were in your trial.
Yes, motive is, according to precedent law, motive is not evidence. If we were to be asked at any one time what our motives were, we can speak about a tremendous analysis that has to take place over the situation of the economics of and priorities of this U.S. Budget. Lynn Greenwald, who is our fifth member, can't be here now. Now, it's interesting, if you do an analysis, there's a little bit of money available for her to run a program for women just coming out of prison near the Catholic Worker in Tacoma. And Lynn is a recent grandmother. And here she is working to pick up the pieces, the fallout, if you will, of the budget, the larceny that the budget represents from clinics and schools and social mm-hmm. programs. And there are people who with just even, you know, just some supervision or some care or some medical treatment wouldn't be on the streets. And so you can see that priorities are there. And here's Lynn coming from her background and helping us with our analysis to say that this is really the fuller picture of the conversion that we're talking about, to go from a war economy to peacetime services and this kind of thing. We think also as well of our motivation would be to wake up, you know, this sleeping giant, the same folks that in the 19th century said, you know, I can't own a slave. I can't participate in slavery. And people would have said, well, this is ridiculous. Our entire economy is dependent upon slavery, is that some have to have and some have not, and some have to work for others. And besides that, it's everyone goes along with that. Well, people just said no. And it was people of faith, the synagogues and churches and congregations that just rose up and said no to slavery in that century. So we like to think of our abolition movement in the face of, you know, flying extermination ovens. Cannot we say no to this kind of Holocaust? Mm. That Bill Bixel and others who went to Japan this previous summer, well, on the, what anniversary was it of Hiroshima?
64th.
The 64th anniversary, and went on a journey of repentance to say this should never, ever happen again. And the people that they were greeted there were very forgiving of the U.S. people because they knew that in many ways it wasn't really the responsibility of individual people, but nonetheless still the responsibility remains with us. So we talk about motive and we say, okay, we can wake up the people to this. But our real intent is what is at issue, before the jury. That's one of the elements of the crime. Was it malicious and willful behavior? Did we go there with a criminal intent, or did we go there with the purpose, with the mental intent of fulfilling international law and our duties as people living in this land to redress the government that's gone astray? I'd also like to make just one point before, and I'll shut up here for a second, is the sense that I have is this is extra national. This is, and I don't even want to use the word even multinational. This is the corporate empire raging against the people. Mm-hmm. These are armaments manufacturers who have absolutely no interest in diplomatic solutions, have no interest whatsoever in so-called peace, even the peace of the graveyard. There has to be tension for them to make money. And all over the, I think all of your listeners, I'm looking at a map here on the wall. If you've got listeners, I guess, who can stream in and all the way around the world. And it's about time that, this isn't about red, white, and blue U.S. This is about making money and money for shareholders and being the top of the heap and all that. And it's about subjugation of peoples in the interest of like I say, extranational profits. So I think that has to be brought in mind in the analysis, and I really appreciate your listeners taking that to heart.
Mm-hmm. And just sort of taking up from where Steve has just led us, you know, I'd just like to say some of the backing, like we have the backing of Archbishop Desmond Tutu from South Africa, and then the Cardinal Keith O'Brien from Scotland, and then some of the people that are coming to be witnesses at our trial are from different nations, like Angie Zelter, who comes from Scotland and represents the United Kingdom, and also Stephen Leeper, who's coming from Hiroshima. He's the director of the Hiroshima Peace and Cultural Foundation. It's a position that, you know, it's the first time a non-Japanese person has had this position, and he's also a spokesperson for the Mayors for Peace, which is an international organization, has over 4,000 members in it, and so he comes to speak. And just to bring out a little bit about the international concern about nuclear weapons, and especially those stored where we are. And I'd just like to maybe mention to a little bit about our Northwest here. I'm a native of Tacoma. I grew up there, went to school there. I've taught in Seattle at Seattle Prep in 68, 69, and then I also community organized in down in Rainier Valley and with the CESCO committee, the Southeast Seattle committee, where we organized there in order to try to build leadership among the people. And so all I want to say too is, you know, just being in the Northwest, I just think that we're so nonchalant or so unaware of the nuclear weapon storage at Bangor, which represents probably the largest nuclear stockpile in the United States, you know, and it's right in our own backyard. And, you know, I think it calls for us to take responsibility. I know that happened in Scotland. Archbishop Keith O'Brien, who sends us his support, that he's part of an ecumenical movement there that has now over 85% of the people want the Trident submarine base that's stationed at Faslane, Scotland, which is the main military weapon of the United Kingdom, as well as their main nuclear weapon. They want it out, but it's only the demand for power, and because there's so much fear of not being with nuclear weapons that nations are exhibiting, you know. So, but more than anything else, I would like to appeal to the people of Seattle and this area, the Northwest, to rise up to look at what those nuclear weapons are about. We've been so programmed to think that they are our deterrent factor. They are our saviors, or we're nonchalant about them, you know, on it. What they are intended to do inside, they are intended to rip apart women, men, children, to destroy people, to burn them alive, to keep them, make them into charcoal remnants. They are intended to degrade and to completely violate and to destroy the environment in which we are lived. They are not our friends at all. They do not have any less. So I would ask those who live in the Northwest, and especially those of your church connected, you know, to take very seriously that, you know, it's not hopeless. You know, as the vision of Isaiah says, we can actually beat swords into plowshares if we rise above this. Rise above the fear that surrounds all of us. You know, we're all kind of embedded in fear, afraid to take the actions and so forth. But to become a voice against this is a matter of life and death, and it's right here in our own backyard. And if this is to be a government by the people, of the people, for the people, however that goes, you know, we have to decide whether we want to live by these death-dealing kinds of mandates that come from our government. So I would inquire, you know, I know the people rose when Archbishop Hunthausen was in jeopardy of being removed by hierarchy. So that I know the people, that they can rise up above, you know, and especially in such a life-dealing matter of nuclear weapons in our midst, can we take the responsibility?
I would like to add that in relation to fear, that I have been with Christian peacemaker teams in Iraq and Palestine. And in Iraq, I saw the destruction of a country. And I know how people felt. There were no suicide bombers at the beginning. That came later. They had some hope when Saddam Hussein was seized by the soldiers. And then they lost hope because they saw that we were there not really to give them a country, but to control the oil. And the torture that people went through, brutality, is destroying our own soldiers. And so I think that we are not against the young men and women in the military. They are part of the victims because they come back and they're suicides and so forth and so on. So I'm a child of a naval officer, so I loved the Navy growing up. And then I see it turned into this sort of technological force that speaks a different language, the language of, you know, cruisers that carry weapons, aircraft carriers. It's all so organized that compartmentalized, that the soldiers and sailors don't really connect with what they're doing any more than our citizens do when the weapons are hidden from them.
Speaking of weapons, on the horizon, something that we should all be concerned about is Obama has made some kinds of overtures about reduction of nuclear weapons. Maybe even he personally even has a hope that they'll all be gone. But in negotiating for a treaty with Russia, the Republicans that have been the hawks as well in both houses have stated that they want a whole renewal of nuclear weapons. This is very scary. This is hundreds of billions of dollars in the next 10 years. Where is that money coming from? And it may seem like an abstract issue in many ways, but it's that the Republicans will say, we will sign this treaty of yours, mostly the Senate, you know, if you allow all of these nuclear weapons to be replaced. I can't think of anything more twisted and turned inside out in terms of logic. A peace treaty that begins with, well, this same twist of logic that peace through strength, peace through threatening others. I don't know how that can even how you can even envision that. So that's something I think on the horizon, and I think it's very disturbing in the middle of trillion-dollar debts and the economy and the shape that it's in. We're not making things the rest of the world wants.
We only have a few minutes left, and talking with four of the five members of the Disarm Now Plowshares 5. Let's let people know again there are some important events coming up, beginning with the trial on December 7th.
Yes, the trial, beginning the night before, the eve of the trial, December 6th, we'll have a Festival of Hope at St. Leo's Church. We invite people to come. There's a potluck at 5:30, and then there'll be a program with Angie Zelter speaking, and there'll be music. Raging Grannies will be there. James Morgan. It will be fun. We invite people to come. Then Tuesday we'll begin the trial with jury selection, and then again at 5:30 at St. Leo's Church, there'll be dinner and a program, and we're very fortunate to have retired Colonel Ann Wright, the main speaker, and also retired Captain, Navy Captain Tom Rogers, will be speaking too. He was a submarine commander. And there'll be music and a trial update. And then on Wednesday, again, there'll be the trial during the day. Probably the U.S. attorney will be putting forward his case. And then again at 5:30, there will be dinner at next door to St. Leo's at the Catholic Community Service Great Hall. And at that evening, Stephen Leeper from the Hiroshima Museum that Vix was talking about will be speaking, and Holly Gwynn Graham and Tamara Power Drudas will be playing some music. And then Thursday, the trial continues, and perhaps by then it will be our turn to put on our defense. We don't know when that will begin exactly. And again, there'll be dinner at 6 o'clock at the Catholic Community Services. And Michael Honey will be speaking, as well as Dave Hall from Physicians for Social Responsibility, and perhaps Annabelle Dwyer, who's an international law lawyer. And then Friday, the trial will probably continue, and Friday evening we'll also gather.
All right. And people can find out more about this via the website?
Yes.
Which is?
disarmnowplowshares.wordpress.com.
Very good. Well, we have just about a minute left. Would any of you like to leave us with a final thought?
Well, I'd just like to say that we can do this together. You know, we need the help of others. You know, we need the help of living in an environment in which we are not spreading death, but hope. We live in an environment covered with fear. You know, we can rise above it.
Well, with that, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to thank all four of you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.